Hey everybody, thanks for listening to this episode of My First Sketch at MyFirstSketch.com. I'm Josh Hyam. Any questions, thoughts, recommendations, feel free to email me at josh@myfirstsketch.com. You can like the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/myfirstsketch. It would be really cool if you rate it 5 stars and leave a review wherever you get the podcast. So we're a little more than a week away from Sketchybator, our live sketch comedy open mic at Tattooed Moms on South Street here in Philly. Sunday, May 7th, 2 p.m., and all the info, including if you want to sign up beforehand, is available at sketchybator.com. We're going to start highlighting a few of the troops heading to Montreal Sketchfest over the next few weeks. You can learn more at montrealsketchfest.com. I've already talked to a bunch of the comedians heading to Montreal, so feel free to dig into the archives. But today's guest is Rachel Nicewander, currently a member of Rails Comedy. Rachel now lives in New York City, and Rails Comedy is mostly based in Washington, D.C., but they're making it work. Rails Comedy is hosting Sketch Comedy Spectacular this Saturday, April 29th at 8 p.m. at the D.C. Arts Center, with sets from Bad Medicine and The Character Show. Tickets are available at railscomedy.com. Then, Rails Comedy is heading to Montreal Sketchfest, performing on May 10th at 8 p.m., and I'm totally going to English this up, because I'm pretty sure this isn't how it's pronounced, but at Theater St. Catherine, along with Jonah Border, West to West, and Gotham K. Head to montrealsketchfest.com for more info on that show. Rachel's first sketch is called Shack Poop. It's a town hall kind of setting, so Rachel reads all the different townspeople with their questions, and I read the roles of the politicians hosting it, and Shaquille O'Neal himself. For Shaquille O'Neal, I don't even try to do a good impression. I just try to go a little deeper with my voice. So let's go to the sketch. Interior town hall meeting. Shaq is sitting in the middle of two politicians. A group of townspeople are sitting in chairs facing the panel. Thank you all for joining us tonight, and a warm welcome to our special guest, Mr. Shaquille O'Neal. The politicians and town people all applaud, and Shaq gives one of those cheeky little smiles. As you all know, Shaq will be playing in our charity basketball tournament this year, and we couldn't be more excited. So now we would like to open up the floor to anyone who would like to ask the man a question himself. Politician steps back, and they look into the audience. A woman raises her hands. Yes, the woman in the back. That woman stands.
Hello, Mr. O'Neal. First of all, we are so excited to see you play, and just had a quick question. What's your shoe size?
I'm a size 22.
Jeez, they should call you Bigfoot.
The woman does an ugly laugh and sits back down. Yes, you, the boy in the front. The boy stands.
Hey, Shaq, I just wanted to know, how tall are you?
I'm 7'1".
Oh, wow, thank you.
The boy sits down, and the politician points the next question at asker. The man over there.
Hello, Mr. O'Neal. Huge fan. Okay, I got so much respect and admiration for you. With that being said, you know how small dogs have small poops, and big dogs have big poops? Do you poop out a turd the size of a toddler when you drop a deuce, or...
Okay, sir, seriously, that was your question? We're gonna have to ask you to leave. The man gets up and walks towards the exit door, but he sits down in the back instead. As the man is doing this, our attention goes to someone else with their hand raised. Oh, yes, you.
Hey, Mr. O'Neal. For 6 seasons, you had the record for total free throw attempts. So, I just kind of wanted to know, what's your record for your biggest poop?
Okay, really? Come on.
No, wait. I mean, you're a pretty big guy, Shaq. So, like, they must be massive, right?
Yeah, but are they just, like, super long?
No, I feel like they're probably a normal length, just way wider.
All right, that's enough. The poop inquirers all sit down and another person raises their hand. Politician points to them and they stand. Please tell me you aren't going to ask Mr. O'Neal an inappropriate question.
No, I won't. But I'd like him to ask it again.
The person points at man over there who asked the original question. The man over there raises from a seat. Didn't we ask you to leave?
Yeah, but please, just let me ask one more question.
Is it going to be the same question as before?
No. It's not going to be the exact same question.
Fine.
Okay.
Mr. O'Neill. Is it more like a longer beats pill, or like if a football didn't come to those points at the end and just stayed all like round and plump?
Okay, this is ridiculous. Everyone needs to stop.
We want poop! We want poop! We want poop!
Other townspeople begin to stand and chant, "We want poop." Now the whole room is chanting, "We want poop," except for the two politicians and Shaq. Maybe we even hear the woman in the back yell, "Shaq, what's shooting out of your Hershey Highway?" Okay, let's quiet it down, everyone. Otherwise, we won't be able to hear Shaq's answer. Come on, Shaq. How big are your poops?
I mean, I guess the people do need to know. But I don't really know how to describe it.
Okay, how about this, Shaq? Just tell me when. The politician holds his hands out and slowly pulls them further apart. The lights go down before we see Shaq's day stop. We will never know just how big or small Mr. Shaquille O'Neal's poops are.
My name is Samantha Russell. I'm a sketch comedian, and I have a prop and costume hoarding problem. So I figured the best way to get it under control is to start a podcast. On Should I Keep This? I chat with other comedians about their experiences in comedy and our insane prop and costume collections. And on each episode, we both bring a beloved item to discuss whether it's a treasure or just trash. Sometimes it turns out no matter how much money or time we spent on a prop, the only thing we should be holding on to are the memories we've made along the way. So check out Should I Keep This? We have new episodes every 2 weeks available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, Rachel.
Howdy.
So tell me about the sketch. Why are you so preoccupied with Shaq's poop?
That's a really good question. literally no idea. I remember this was a sketch that I wrote back in college. We had like a little sketch team in college called Maryland Night Live at the University of Maryland. And I remember this was like our last pitch meeting, just really scraping the bottom of the barrel for ideas. And I wrote basically just that joke about like small dogs have small poops, big dogs have big poops. Like, how big are Shaq's poops? Like, that was all I had at the pitch meeting. And then somehow just made that one joke last for 4 minutes. Which is, like, definitely something you should definitely do. But, yeah, more just an intrusive thought that I shared with the group that made its way onto paper.
I mean, I totally understand. He's a massive, giant man. Like, so this was a college sketch troupe. All right, so tell me about Maryland Night Live.
Yeah, it was like, a college sketch group basically set up like an episode of Saturday Night Live, except we also had stand-up comics. Okay. So actually basically all the people in Rails, or at least the first sort of iteration of Rails, all came from Maryland Night Live, and we kind of met through that and just kept going. And actually the guy who started Rails also started Maryland Night Live, so okay. Just kind of brought us all together. I joined sophomore year and basically did it the rest of the time. And even through COVID, we did online shows and, you know, got crazy with it.
How long did it exist before you joined up sophomore year? Was it like
only one semester? An institution? Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So you're pretty new, close to the ground floor. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to remember, like, I could have sworn that there's another sketch team from University of Maryland that come up and played here in Philly a couple times. And I was like, wait, yeah. I don't think they're the same ones timeline wise.
Yeah, there is another, like, called SketchUp. I think they've been around since like the 80s or something.
Okay. Okay. So I definitely didn't see y'all perform in 2017 or whatever it was.
Nah. You might have seen some of the people in M&L were also in SketchUp, so you might have seen a couple individuals, but the group was a different group.
Sure. I mean, and you say that you didn't join right at the beginning, but was there a specific reason why there's a Maryland Night Live when there already is a SketchUp? Like, there's part of me that I don't understand, like, maybe I'm just not used to the idea of, like, two competing, competing might not be the right word, but
there's like five or six comedy groups at UMD. It's kind of
okay.
I feel like we're like weirdly a big, so like, comedy school.
So it's not necessarily some dude got screwed over by the one troop to start and went off to start their own thing necessarily.
I don't think so. I mean, okay. maybe that was at the core of some of the groups, but I guess I was never on the ground floor except for I started like my senior year, just like an open mic, like a stand-up club. Okay. But that was more just because the bar we used to do open mics at got closed after COVID. So I was like, I guess we'll just do this in the cafeteria now. So, but that one definitely didn't have any bad blood or anything.
Yeah, because I guess I never like, I don't know. For me, it always seems like whenever I talk to people that were in like college sketch teams, there was one college sketch team. So this idea that Maryland
There's another group that did choice of improv, it, like, stand-up, and sketch. Yeah, so there was like three groups that did sketch when I was there.
So this was this the sketch come from like your that sophomore year time, or was this later on, like in your time?
Yeah, this was like one of the first like things I had ever written there.
So what did it feel like to present as you say, this like weird thought bubble that you had as a sketch to the team? What was in your mind of like, hey, I have this, would you like to read it?
Definitely mostly embarrassment, because I was like, I know this actually a different iteration of this actually made it into the show. Absolutely bombed. Like, definitely should not have been in the show, but we made it. We tried to like make it into a blackout and it just be like, hey, you just the dog reference or whatever, and then it was like, how big is the poop, and then it blacks out, and then we wanted it so like in the blackout we hear him say stop, but then once like the lights went down, people were just clapping and we're like, oh, I guess that one's over, and like it missed it, and just
that audience monkey brain of, oh, the lights are out, well, applaud and move on, like,
because we were like, oh, let's be different, like the guy was in the audience who asked the question, like one of our cast members snuck into the audience in the transition. We were like, this is gonna be crazy, like it's just a Shaq joke, but it's so unique and different, and then it just totally bombed. Like, definitely it was not good, but
that's something that you have to learn, like when you're first getting started, is like, sometimes the audience is going to play with you when you want to do something a little more conceptual like that. So
that's true.
It's going to happen. It's fine.
Yeah.
So when you were involved with Maryland Night Live, like, how big would the cast have been? Like, was there a distinction between writers and performers, or like,
Yeah. My first show, I was just a writer. So that was actually part of the reason I never really did the other comedy groups that did sketch, just because I was like, I've never performed anything. Like, I'd never done theater, done anything on a stage. Like, I, elementary school, had like stage fright, started crying when I had to give a presentation. So I was like, the stage is not for me. That's since changed. But unfortunately for the people around me, now I'm an egomaniac that needs to be on the stage. But I just wanted to be a writer. So there was me, and I think maybe like three-ish other people who were just writers. And then there were probably like 10 or so cast members, and then a couple of stand-ups also, who would be kind of in the writing meetings, but not always like producing sketches. But a lot of times those guys would be good at like the writing update jokes or writing characters, or sometimes they would host the update desk, a lot of the times the stand-ups. So there's definitely a lot of overlapping though.
What drew you to getting involved and joining up with Maryland Night Live?
I actually didn't even like hear about or know about the group until I was walking in our student union and I saw a poster, and they had basically copied like the exact, you know, SNL typography and everything, and just changed it to Maryland. So it caught my eye.
Which you kind of have to do.
Yeah, it's pretty smart. It's pretty good. You gotta give them credit, you know. But it caught my eye, and the performance was literally like that night in like 20 minutes. So I like was like, what? And I like ran up and saw the show. It was the first one that they had done my spring semester freshman year. I saw the show and I was like, wow, this is actually like really funny, you know? Because I not that I was like expecting it to be bad. But I feel like when you call yourself Maryland Night Live, it's like you're literally comparing yourself to, like, I feel like the biggest, you know, most well-known sketch thing. So I'm like, what are these jokers about? And then I was like, oh, wait, they're actually, like, pretty funny. So then I ended up, like, applying later, you know, in the summer when we started the fall show.
What would have that process been like to apply to join the writer's room or the cast?
It was just, like, a packet. So I think it was maybe, like, two sketches and, like, a handful of, like, Weekend Update-style jokes.
Hmm, okay. Do you remember any of your Weekend Update jokes?
I remember I had, like, one that they told me, like, later, because my sketches were, like, garbage, but they were like, man, your jokes are really good. Like, that's what, you know, I guess pushed me in or whatever. I had one where it was, like, you know, a New Jersey punchline, and I think one of the producer people was from New Jersey, and I guess that it really, like, hit home or something for him, so that made me, like, stand out to them.
So, all right, we'll go back to the beginning then. Before, you know, you get involved, what were you into growing up? Like, what was your comedy fandom? What made you laugh?
I've basically been watching SNL since, like, middle school. Like, I watched literally every episode, devouring every, you know, YouTube clip, every bootleg thing I can find.
Okay, I'm going to make myself feel awful, but, like, when we say middle school, who would have been your cat, like, that first cast,
like,
that you saw?
Phil Hader, Kristen Wiig, Fred Armisen, like...
Yeah. I'm already like 10 years deep in by that point, you know, yeah. Watching it. Yeah. I mean, you have a great cast to grow up with, so, I mean, that's not a bad thing
literally
at all.
All of them have gone on and done other, like, Barry is back now. I love Barry. They're, like, all amazing. I love them so much.
Were you actually staying up to watch it Saturday nights? Or were you already, like, YouTube streaming the next morning kind of thing?
Like, a little bit of both. So, okay. I think at first my mom was like, I don't know about this, you know, because I'm, like, some 12-year-old watching, you know, SNL until midnight or whatever. So I think I would only watch until Weekend Update, and then I would watch the rest later online.
Sure, okay.
But now now that I moved to New York, I've done the standby line, like, I've been able to, like, fully immerse myself in the SNL fandom and everything.
Wait, so you've been to a live, like, taping?
Yeah. I've only done the dress rehearsal, but I think I've done, like, 7 episodes this season.
Oh, wow. That's...
It's a perk of not having any plans ever, that I can just wait in a line.
Wait, so you're in, I mean, we're going to talk about this later, but, like, you're in New York.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get back to that.
yeah, sorry.
So I ask everybody, so let's go jump into it. Who's your favorite SNL cast member of all time?
That's really tough. I guess Bill Hader is definitely one of the top ones, but I feel like I also think Norm Macdonald needs recognition, even though not necessarily cast member in, like, the cast member-y way, but in as a Weekend Update anchor. Like, I watch compilations of those literally every week. I'll watch the new ones. Like, he's, like, the best.
So Norm Macdonald was, like, in my original cast, and when I first started watching, he was playing Bob Dole, who was running for president that year.
Oh, yeah.
So for all that time that, like, Norm Macdonald was just the update dude, for a while he was update dude plus Bob Dole. So, like, everything I know about Bob Dole is filtered through Norm Macdonald. Like, yeah. There was a sketch
that's the only reason I had heard of him, to be honest. Right. I was like, oh, he plays this character named Bob Dole. That's fun. That's like, that's a real guy.
Like, yeah. The hand paralysis stuff. But there's a sketch, and I don't know if you've ever seen it, but you need to hunt it down if you've never seen it, where Bob Dole, after losing the election, joins the cast of The Real World. And it's
taught. Sounds familiar. I'll have to see
And it's
it.
Done in, like, I think, like, 3 little clips throughout the episode. And it's really hard to find online because it's so full with music, you can't, you know, license all that music like appropriately. Because I think it's, like, just wall to wall Smashing Pumpkins. But it's such a weird, funny thing. And, like, I'm not going to say it's homework for you, but.
I'll definitely check it out. This down. I'm adding this to my planner. Yeah.
But like, yeah, and I actually I did Bad Medicine's episode about Norm MacDonald after he passed away, and I was like, no, Norm MacDonald's great. And Andy was not a big Norm MacDonald fan, so
what?
We had a little issue there.
What? That's crazy talk.
But anyway, okay, so what is it about Bill Hader that puts him closer to the top for you?
I guess I like that. I feel like he could do like anything. Like, he did impressions really well. He could do weird, unique characters. He could also play a great straight man, you know, game show host that he's probably played 30 times in a row or whatever. Like, I think I really value that. And I also, you know, now that I've watched interviews or whatever of him talking, and, like, he's been very open about some of his, like, anxiety, or, like, he said reading the cue cards, he would purposely mess up the first word or something just to, like, get that mistake off your chest. And I feel like someone who gets really nervous about performing and things, like, kind of hearing, like, this dude's, like, on top of the world right now, and he still has, like, similar issues, I think also kind of made me a fan of, like, him as a person, not just as a performer or comedian or whatever.
Yeah, I forget what it was, but, like, that one interview where he said he was, like, he was almost leaving. Like, he was in his last season. He knew he was gone, and he was still having those major anxiety attacks before shows. Like, you're like the king at the moment of this show. Like,
yeah.
Wow. That's,
Stefan is
so
like
wild
the biggest thing ever. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The fact that he was still hiding somewhere, like having a minor like attack, was just incredible to think about. Like,
yeah.
So wild. Okay. So you mentioned that you weren't necessarily a performer or, you know, a theater kid growing up. So was it always writing?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I guess I'll reveal myself here. I'm actually a girl in STEM. So I was always a big, like, math was always my favorite subject. But I really liked sort of artsy, creative things. Because, like, I also took art for 4 years in high school or whatever and, like, did some of that. So I feel like I kind of always been into, like, creative writing stuff, but never, I guess, saw it as more than just, like, a pastime sort of thing.
Right.
Until kind of getting more into comedy stuff, and then I'm like, wait a sec, I can do this all the time, you know? Forget the spreadsheets, you know?
Yeah, it's about the thing, because I'm a little bit the same way. I wasn't much of a science person, but I was good at math, and I definitely had one high school math teacher that resented me because I wanted to write more than become, like, an engineer or something, and he's just like, you're wasting everything. I was like, that's more fun. Like,
yeah.
Sorry. Like,
yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so you had mentioned, so you mentioned going into that show, that freshman year of Maryland Night Live, enjoying it. So what's the push to be like, hey, let me get involved. Like, where do you get like the guts to be like, yeah, let me come do this.
I don't know. I guess I was just like, also another embarrassing fact about me. I had like no friends freshman year. Like, it took me forever to like make friends. So I was like, those are people I want to hang out with. You know, like it was like, oh, like that. I could see them, you know, being my circle or whatever, which is true. Like, that's basically the only people I'm friends with are people I met through, you know, comedy stuff on campus. So I think it was also more of a desperate attempt to get friends. It was probably the core motivator.
I that's totally fair. The idea of like, hey, these people like what I like and do things I want to do. Hopefully there's more. There's more things that overlap. Okay, so let's talk about, so you joined Maryland Night Live as a sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
And you do it for the rest of the time that you're in school?
Yeah.
So what is the typical, like, semester layout for Maryland Live? Like, how many shows are you doing? What's the, like, are you turning over shows? Are you doing, like, a couple reviews throughout the semester? Or does it all lead up to one show? Like, how's it go?
It's, It's basically, like, totally different than every other comedy group. Mostly, I think, because a lot of the people that were in Maryland Night Live, I think it was sort of intended to, like, bring together almost, like, the best of the best from all the other groups. So most of the other groups kind of worked toward either one big show or they did, like, little shows every month or something like that. So Maryland Night Live did basically a six-week production for a 90-minute show, and it would be at the beginning of the semester. So we would actually do, like, the bulk of the writing before classes even started.
Okay.
And part of that, too, our school had, like, this, like, arts festival, Next Now Fest, and that would be, like, you know, second week or something of school. And we actually, fall semester senior year, I think, I, like, hosted the, we got to be in, like, the big theater that we were, like, working up toward, and we, like, headlined one of the nights and performed in front of, like, 600 something people, which was, like, really crazy. So I think we had, like, the biggest audience of, like, any of the other comedy groups, but we have such a weird, intimidating schedule because we do, like, 8 hours of meetings a week, each week leading up to it, and, like, it's basically like a part-time job for, like, a month and a half, and then it's over for the rest of the semester.
So it's just that one show at the beginning of the semester.
Yeah, we tried to do like another show. That was the MNL3. We each show we called like a season. So we tried to like fit another one, but then it was like that one just like was not as good as the others. Like now that we've actually like looked back, we're like, oh, this wasn't even that bad. But at the time we were like, this stunk. Like afterward, like we were like all disappointed. Like so ever since then we've just done one. But we've done, like, me and the guy, Walker, who started MNL and Rails stuff, we did, like, a little late-night talk show that we, like, live-streamed from my living room. We just did, like, a little 60-minute, like, mini show, like, later on in the semester. So, like, the crazy people who wanted to keep going got to do something a little bit different but similar sort of thing.
What was that like to host a talk show instead of doing the sketch show?
Really fun, honestly. I liked it. I guess I've always been a huge, like, late night fan in general, also. So, like, I know there was, like, also during COVID, I got, like, super into it, because it was, like, you know, finally, late night talk shows are doing something different. I felt like they're, like, reinventing, because I feel like sometimes, in general, they feel quite, like, formulaic, except for maybe Conan or Craig Ferguson.
Entirely,
you know?
Formulaic, like...
Yeah.
Like, it feels weird when they don't go to the formula.
Yeah, but it's like, okay, already. So during COVID, there was like a month or two, once the show started coming back, where I watched every single one and like took notes on them and what I liked and like what stuff I thought was unique and original. And I would also try to write like monologue jokes every night and see if any of them made it. I think only, like, three of them were, like, similar-ish out of, like, probably the 100 that I wrote, of course. But yeah, I just got, like, super, super into it. And I think being, like, I guess a math person or whatever, I write tons of, like, lists. Like, a lot of my sketches are also just, like, a list of jokes. Even Shaq Poop is kind of, like, a list of poop jokes, basically, at its core.
Yeah.
So doing, like... desk bits I really enjoyed, and some of them I felt like were hard to, I guess, incorporate into a sketch unless you kind of like make it a character, but really it's just like me presenting, and then the update anchor would be, oh, but what next, or you know, like something stupid. So I kind of liked felt like it was a different type of writing that I really enjoyed.
And you mentioned the idea of like the late night shows having this formula to them. And I wonder if that helps, you know, that math side of your brain where like the layout of a 60 minute talk show is, you know, strict formula, monologue, desk piece, like Seth fluctuates from that a little bit because he doesn't do the stand up monologue, but it's still the same thing. Like, guest, little like filler spot, and then musical guest or stand up or whatever. But like, and even I feel like the like a monologue joke is that same, like, it's all about the rhythm of it, just, you know, plug and play whatever happened today. So when you learn those tricks, does it help you as a writer then?
I feel like yes. I feel like also, like, update jokes are, like, it's more of like a, once you write enough of them, you will be able to write some good ones. Whereas I feel like I could pump out just like 30 terrible sketches and still not have like a great idea. So I feel like those also, like the formulaic aspect of it seems more like conquerable than like coming up with something very unique and original in like a sketch or something like that. Yeah, I don't know though. It's tricky.
All right, so let's talk about the transitioning, you know, getting out of school to real life. Because like being up here in Philadelphia, like I do try to pay attention, especially to the DC stuff, because the DC teams I've met and interacted with, I've liked better than a lot of other people. I'm not going to lie. I've enjoyed their comedy. So when I heard about, and I want to say the first time I ever heard about Rails was, I say last year Rails got into Montreal. So when I was like looking stuff up, I was like, wait, what's this? What's going on here? Who are these people from DC that I've never heard of before? Yeah.
Who are these children?
So, well, I mean, I didn't go that far, but like, it was basically like, I've never heard of these things. What's happening here? So tell me, how do we go from Maryland Night Live at, you know, college to Washington DC and Rails?
Yeah. At least
from your perspective.
Yeah, I think one of the core reasons was actually our Maryland Night Live. We like got in trouble for gathering during the pandemic.
Okay.
We filmed a sketch in this like rehearsal room, and then we took a picture afterward of like all of us like smiling without a mask on, and they literally screenshotted it from our show and like presented it to administration. So then, in order to keep going, we were like, no, we're Rails. We're a DC group.
Okay. So you were still on campus, like, during pandemic lockdown kind of stuff? Like,
yeah, I graduated in spring 2022. So basically a year ago.
But I mean, like, so you were still living, like, on campus? All that.
Not during, like 2020, we all got sent home.
That initial,
like, semester. But then 2021, stuff started coming back hybrid. And I also, like, worked a couple jobs on campus, too. So, like, those you were able to, like, come back and do. And, you know, all the comedy stuff and getting to hang out. And I had already signed a lease for an apartment. So I was like, well, I guess I better
get
my money's worth. Yeah.
Okay, so you kind of get in a little bit of trouble in, you know, 2022, and you're now a DC, magically somehow you're a DC sketch team instead of, you know,
yeah, I think because this was, I think this was like 2021. I forget if it was like what semester or whatever, but a few people had also like already started graduating and had kind of like moved on from UMD stuff. So I think people were also like interested in still performing, but didn't want to, you know, like, can't really like join a college group. You know, that's kind of like weird when everyone else is still in school, sort of thing. So
yes, you have to graduate from your college sketch team.
Yeah, that'd be as a much as you might like them. To keep coming back. Yeah, so I think that also was like at the core of it.
So there is some kind of seed to Rails happening as you're still in school.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you continue your journey from school to Rails?
I guess senior year, I think we did our first sketch show, I think. And I was also still doing like college stuff and stand-up stuff and everything. So it was more just like trying to do everything all the time. And I think it also, like, we kind of coordinated schedules. So it was like after we do our big M&L show, then we'll do a Rail show, or like vice versa sort of thing, to kind of keep it, because there's a lot of like overlap in the people. But yeah, the first one, first Rails sketch show I directed, and of course got some help from the other, you know, sort of Rails producer folks or whatever. And we it was like a half sketch, half improv sort of thing at the DC Arts Center. And that was like the first like proof of concept almost version of it. And then basically just kept doing them all the time.
Yeah, I mean, in my emails to Walker trying to explain, I was like, y'all are prolific enough. Like, I'm going to be bugging you for the next while. So don't worry about this. Like, So tell me what's like. Okay, so you've mentioned that you're in New York. What is it like to be living in one city and now still working with a team that's, I'm assuming, majority based in another?
Yeah. Definitely tough. And I've definitely had to, because I've been in New York for, I moved in like October. So what is that, like 8 months, 7 months, something like that. And basically, as I've, you know, continued to stay here, it's been, I feel like, harder and harder, because also now I'm starting to make connections here and work with people here. So it's kind of like tricky because I'm only able to write, because basically when Rail Sketch team first kind of started and first did shows, I was like kind of one of, if not, I guess, like the main person kind of doing a lot of the stuff. So it's definitely been like a slowly but surely kind of transitioning. And now I just write for the most part and try to come down to see the shows. But sometimes those Amtrak prices be crazy. But I'm sort of now just kind of a writer on the side.
You have to plan ahead for the Amtrak stuff. Like, you have to know, a month out, I'm going to go to that. Like,
yeah, get that $30 ticket when you can.
Right. Like, I think for Philadelphia, it's 19. To
I think it's
DC.
Like 31 like, or something from New York. Yeah.
Once it hits like 40, I'm like, sorry, guys, I'm not coming down.
Yeah. Like, I'm the same. Yeah.
Describe Rails to me, because I haven't seen a Rail show yet. So what would you describe the voice and what audience to expect of Rails?
Yeah, I feel like for the most part, it's like a little bit of everything. And I think for Rails especially, there's like a handful of us sort of at like the core that have been in like most, if not all of the shows. But we also get a lot of people that have kind of come in for maybe just one or two shows, and then they bounce and we get some new people in. So I feel like it's sort of a thing that changes a lot. But I guess at the core, silly, there's usually at least something that's a little political, satirical, whatever. I feel like you have to, in like a DC-based group, you gotta have something like that.
You either have to completely ignore it or lean in and get to it, because, you know, politics are just so part of life in DC, I'm sure. Like,
we actually did for Maryland Tonight, when that happened, when Trump was at Walter Reed with COVID. We actually went there and like filmed a remote there. One of our guys, Bardia, who was like super funny off the cuff, also like interviewed people and edited this like amazing remote. It's like definitely one of the coolest things I think we've ever done.
Is that online?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll have to look it up. All right. So you mentioned that you're live in New York and you're starting to make connections there. So what are you doing in New York? Like have you? I ask this whenever I talk to New Yorkers that are in the comedy scene. Like, have you picked your theater of choice? Like, have you gone to Magnet? Which one did you go to like first?
Yeah, not yet. I want to take more classes and stuff, because I did Pitt's like solo comm show.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I've performed there, and like I've seen stuff at Magnet. Also, I know a few people who like do stuff there too. I also know the Brooklyn Comedy Collective also has a lot of shows. A lot of people go there too. So I feel like I've been asking everyone, and everyone's like, oh, I liked this one. And then I'll talk to the next person. They're like, oh, I hated that place. And I'm just I don't know.
You just have to find the home that works best for you. Like,
yeah.
You have to, like, because the people I've talked to, it's been like, oh, yeah, just their class was cheaper at that moment, so I bought that class instead of that. Like, you know, it's completely, there's no real rhyme or reason to, like, what allegiance you might have to the New York theaters. So what are you doing, though? Like, are you still in that, like, I'm getting comfortable in the city and seeing stuff, or are you starting to dip your toe into meeting people and connecting that way?
Yeah, I feel like just in the last, like, month or so, I feel like I'm finally, Like, I've been trying to do open mics, you know, a few times a week. I met some people who want to do sketch stuff, so we've been having, like, a couple, like, more casual meetings. Like, we're still kind of figuring out. Because I think some people want to just do, like, digital stuff. Some people are more into the live stuff. You know, we're trying to still plan that out, but at least I have sort of, like, a circle of people we're kind of talking to. And I took a character class with the Characters Welcome people. So yeah. I've been trying to, like, I've been applying to some more character things and, like, trying to get some more stage time for that since, like, I don't really have, like, a legit group yet. But I have finally enough money to see shows and take more classes and all of that now that's been a few months of paychecks. So
I think that's something that I think is a skill that a lot of people need that should do is learning how to write solo pieces and learning how to become a character and doing that kind of stuff. Like, I think that's a really good skill for a comedy writer to have, especially when, you know, when you're used to sketches, like, sorry, mm-hmm. dude, you don't have five friends right now to that will help you do this.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Do it yourself.
I'm like, I guess I could buy some wigs. Yeah. I'm like,
right,
I'm
exactly.
going, like, God, like, what am I going to do? Like,
sometimes wigs are cheaper than having friends. Like, it's
yeah, true. It's true.
So you mentioned a couple times about stand-up. So what started you on your stand-up journey?
I guess stand-up was, like, the first thing. My very first, like, open mic that I did on campus was, like, my first time ever performing in front of an audience. And now I, like, read that set. I'm like, God, this was garbage. You know, like, I'm like, ooh, this is terrible. How did people compliment me like those liars? But
that's all right. Someone else will do my first stand-up joke. That's not my podcast.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I won't have to reveal any of the bad stuff. But yeah, I guess I was just like, let me try this out. And I feel like it's a lot lower stakes than sketch. Because also, if it's like, if your sketch starts bombing right at the beginning, you're like, crap, I got to sit in this for four more minutes. Or stand up, I can just abandon it. Next joke, like, forget it even happened. Like,
yeah.
So that's been, like, a good way, I feel like, to test stuff out. And also, if it's, like, I think of a joke that just isn't working in a sketch, then I can just kind of extract it and put it into a stand-up set and still be able to, like, kind of milk it for any laugh that I can get.
That was, yeah, and you're leading me right into my next question about, like, how does your comedy brain divert the ideas, like, which one's going to go the stand-up way, which one's going to go the sketch way? Like, how have you learned to process that for yourself?
I feel like a lot of, there's, like, a lot of overlap, I think, for me. So I guess that's been sort of a perk. Less writing, double the outcome. No, because I'm trying to do. I guess I don't want to sound like, oh, I'm so arrogant and original or whatever. But I feel like stand up, it's like you see so many, like, boring cookie cutter people, and also because I'm still just doing open mics, like, I'm not, you know, good enough to be at, like, I feel like a next level or whatever. So I've been trying to, like, think of almost how can I incorporate more weird sketch stuff. So, like, one of the characters I wrote, I did it on stage and kind of, like, did sort of, like, a modified, like, condensed, shorter version of it. And that actually, like, ended up working, like, better than I thought it was going to be, which was, like, nice. And I've also started, because for Maryland Tonight, our, like, late night thing, I did this, like, desk piece about graphs, kind of like Dimitri Martin-esque. So then I actually, like, wrote them out on paper and did it, like, at a mic and, like, flipped the pages and ripped off the things and, like, had it like that. So I think I've been trying to, like, figure out how can I kind of bring, because I feel like sketch, there's so much room for weird stuff, unique stuff, different stuff. But then stand up, it's like all the clips you see are, like, these cool hot guys doing crowd work. And, like, to me, that's just, like, so boring. So I've been trying to figure out, like, how can I bring some of this, like, weird, unique stuff into a stand up set.
It's so funny to me that you called Stand Up Cool Hot Guys. Like, it's like
because comedy is not for the hot people. But the hot people already have their thing. Like, the hot people don't deserve to infiltrate the comedy world.
That's why it's funny to me.
Matt Rife has like millions of followers, millions of views on TikTok. He's already a hot guy. He doesn't need this extra attention. Driven from being bitter. That is my motivation.
We can talk about like the bummer that it is that like these TikTok people are getting weekends at comedy clubs, and like it just,
some of them are good. I will admit, I don't want to hate all of them, but there's a large portion that just post terrible crowd work bits. I'm also not a big crowd work person unless it's like a vessel to get to a joke. But the people that like just are like, oh, let me talk to you. It's like, what? You didn't prepare anything?
No.
Like,
I'm paying money and buying two drinks. I'm not talking to you. Like,
yeah.
So that you can try to make
not be
me.
In it. Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
That's not how that works for me either. Like, you have to be like Todd Barry for that to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need an open micer doing crowd work. Like,
yeah,
actually,
literally.
Try to rake jokes, dude. So I don't know if your sample size is big enough to have a full, like, did you notice a difference in audiences between, you know, your time in college doing that versus playing with in DC with Rails and everything, and now in New York? Like, have you noticed the differences that the three cities basically have?
Yeah, I think being at college was like a very good way to get started, because it was I'd be like, how about them midterms? And everyone would go, ah, ha, ha. You know, like, it was like so easy to play, because it's like, I know exactly what they're thinking because I am a student like that, you know? So I think that helped. And I feel like I also, which is like, you know, now that I think about it, it's like, well, duh. But like being a younger person, I feel like all my references are young people oriented, because I remember I did like a show in DC and it was a bunch of like, you know, 40-year-olds that I have nothing in common with. I'm going like, guys, ever heard of this song? And they're like, no. And I'm like, oh crap, you know, like I got two minutes on this I was about to do, you know. So I think that like the DC audience seemed to be like older, but maybe also it just felt older to me because I was still a student when I performed in DC pretty much, because I basically only had like the summer where I wasn't, you know, a working gal or a student. And now here, it's like, I feel like everyone's young again. I feel like I like mesh a lot better with a lot of the open mics I've gone to. Some of them though, it'll be like a room full of like, you know, old dudes, and I'm like, this isn't for me. But I feel like just because there's so many rooms, I can find the ones that's like the girls in the gays room, you know, the young people, the Brooklyn hipsters, you know, like I kind of know like, okay, this mic I can do this type of stuff, you know, like, I kind of have a better sense of, like, where to find the audiences, whereas I feel like DC, it was like, all of them are pretty much the same, you know?
Yeah, you definitely have this thing of, like, you can walk into a space, you know, for a mic, or at least be like, oh, this one's not my energy at all, like.
Yeah.
And those things are going to be helpful if you actually do them and do well. Like, you're going to learn, like, oh, okay, this is how I deal mm-hmm. with this audience, like. Okay, so as you really just kind of focus more on the writing for Rails, like, do you miss performing with them?
Yeah. Definitely. No. I guess the rehearsal phase is always like when you finally see the sketch come to life.
Yeah.
And it's just really hard to, you can't really be there virtually, you know.
Oh,
like,
that's
just really not the same, I feel like.
That's an interesting thought. So what is it like to know, to basically, like, take a sketch, it gets picked for the show, and because you're in a different city, you have to just completely let go, like, of whatever, you know, if you're on your fourth draft or whatever it is, and you give it to the troupe, they're now rewriting it live up on their feet. So what has that been like for you, if you actually like had that, you know, that experience of seeing your draft having been changed on stage, when you actually got to see it?
Yeah. Because, I had done this, I'd written, like, a character that I, like, submitted for Rail Stuff that somebody else ended up playing it. And it was kind of funny because, like, it was, like, basically, like, a guy that just, like, doesn't get movies. He thinks they're all real. It's sort of, like, the premise of it or whatever. And, like, I went on, there's this, like, one bit about, like, Tom Hanks where he just lists, like, all these Tom Hanks movies. Like, how did one guy do all this? And, like, he's, like, freaking out. So then, like, the Rails people were like, let's just make the whole sketch a Tom Hanks thing. And then I presented it to, this was, like, when I was writing for that character class. And then it's, like, the instructor was like, yeah, you talk about Tom Hanks for, like, so long. Like, why did you do that? You know? So then I'm like, like, I'm getting, like, conflicting information. So I almost have, like, two or three drafts of some of the stuff I've written that's kind of like, you know, almost, I try to kind of make best of both worlds if I can, but because I guess I want to take in all the notes that I can, but it's hard to know till you actually perform it, you know, what actually is sort of the better version or whatever.
So how are you leaning currently with that Tom Hanks material? Like,
I think I've only ever performed the one that isn't all Tom Hanks, but I did incorporate, I like switch up the order so like it ends on a big Tom Hanks thing, but I still had like other stuff earlier, I guess, because I liked that I could sub it out, like it was more of a refillable that way when there's more movies and more options. So like at the time Avatar had just came out when I had done it, when I performed it here. So I had, like, I wrote, like, a new Avatar thing, and I wrote something, oh, a cocaine bear, I think I made a joke about, you know, like, so you can really hit, I feel like when it's topical, the joke doesn't have to be as good, so it's more like that, it's almost a cheat code for me, because, like, any inside joke, topical, any of those things, you can get an easy laugh without having to work as hard, so that was sort of why I wanted to, like, keep those in, and also them being fresh, I feel like it made it easy to understand right off the bat, whereas the Tom Hanks was more like leaning into it over time.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, like, topical doesn't have to be as good, because like, because as one of the producers of Philly Sketchfest, people always ask me, like, I've been asked, like, advice about, like, submitting, you know, for festivals like that, and I was like, never do topical. Never submit your topical stuff, because however long after this happens, it's not as funny as it was that night, and it's clear, it's definitely not your best work. Like,
So I agree 100% on that. Yeah. That's why, like, I love Conan. Like, I love that I can watch clips literally of his show from like 1995 and it's still hilarious. Whereas because I was kind of like on the tail end of like Jon Stewart, for example. So it's like, I never
terrifying
really watched
that you said that.
Anything.
Terrifying that you said that.
I think he left in, what, like 2014 or 15, which was like, you know, 9th, 10th grade, I think. So
stop talking about
that. That was kind of when I started getting into like more of the late night stuff. So, but now I feel left out because everyone always talks about how great Jon Stewart was, but I feel like I'll never be able to fully appreciate it. Same with Colbert Report. I was a huge fan of his Hungry for Power games in, what, 2015 or 16 or whatever, though. That, I think, is one of the best, like, political, topical, late-night things as of late that I can remember that I watched.
Yeah, it'd be interesting
anyways,
to see,
for a tangent,
like...
Yeah.
No, it's a great change, because it'd be interesting to see how... And I don't know if any of that stuff's, like, streaming, like, legally, of, you know, the Colbert Report and Jon Stewart's Daily Show, like, how that stuff survives and how that, like... Because it's so in the moment of, like, you know, the joke was, like, that's where my generation got its news, was through Stewart and Colbert, and they're not totally wrong, so. It'd be interesting, to see how, like, that character of Stephen Colbert, how that's looked upon in, like, 5-10 years again, like, if we ever revisit, compared to what he is now, which, I mean, he's just turned it down slightly, like, I mean, Stephen Colbert is just great. I love Stephen Colbert. Did you do any improv? Because I know Rails is there an improv arm to
that's
the Rails?
That's like the one comedy thing I've never. Okay. Yeah, there is. We Rails produces like a lot of improv shows, and they just started offering workshops too. Rails comedy workshops for improv and everything. So we have like some other sort of big improv people in DC kind of working with us and doing spots and hosting workshops and all that jazz.
So, I mean, you mentioned going to like rooms and stuff and taking that class, that character's class with, I'm going to call them the squirrel people. So what's your plan, like comedy-wise, as you're, you know, living in New York?
Yeah, I think I want to keep doing the sketch stuff. So I guess that's sort of like my main thing. And then stand up, I mostly just do to like get reps in and meet more people and talk to more people. Cause I guess like I would love to be like a late night writer one day. Yeah. That's like the ultimate dream. So I'm just trying to be like, what are all of the skills I would need to do that? And how can I, you know, acquire those? I definitely want to take some sketch classes. During the pandemic, when it was, like, online, I took, writing 1-4 through Second City. And I feel like that...
Oh, how was that?
Like, helped a lot. I really liked it also because it wasn't... I took, like, their writing, not their sketch writing. So, like, some weeks we'd be writing late-night pieces. We had, like, a two-week thing that we wrote this, like, John Oliver-esque, like, more in-depth kind of, like, almost, like, journalism sort of comedy thing. We did, satire writing, like, a little bit of everything, which I thought was really cool.
That's interesting, because I only did the one class through the Groundlings, actually. And it's very, very valuable information that, like, I kind of blew off at first. But, like, thinking back, I was like, oh, that dude totally made sense. Like, I'm on board. Like, sorry, I might have been a little. As we're winding down here, I generally, you know, end with the same two questions, basically. A little deeper to begin. Mm-hmm. I would still consider you a baby writer, and I don't mean that with any, like,
malice
or anything. but you have a baby
character I'm working on. And I just got this pacifier actually at the dollar store. It says Moody without Foodie. Cheapest prop ever. Anyway,
but you've been doing stuff for a while. So do you have any advice that you would give to a new writer?
Yeah, I feel like probably ask someone with more knowledge and experience. But I would say I feel like just write down everything. I guess that's something that I guess thinking of ideas to me is like the hardest part ever. So I literally just write down every time I have like a mildly funny thought into this note on my phone, and if I need inspiration I go to that. And then once you start writing, if you can crank out a few pages in like 20-30 minutes, like if it just keeps flowing, then you know it's a good idea. If you kind of are like stuck on something, then I feel like it's worth just moving on to the next idea. So I feel like every good sketch I've written has like flowed right out. So don't like force an idea. You can let it simmer a little, you know, until you can just let it flow.
Yeah, that beautiful vomit draft of like just let it go and those are hard for me because I always want to like go back and edit immediately. That's one of the things I'm constantly teaching myself, like just get it out and edit later.
It'll be five pages of crap at first, but then you'll narrow it down to like 3 pages and you can bulk it up and then usually that's what I try to go for.
And then, I mean, it sounds like you do have aspirations for this to be like your career. Like, I mean, you've said the goal is late night for the most part. So, you know, even growing up as a fan of, you know, SNL, like, you know, finding it in middle school, why has comedy hooked you? Like, what is it about comedy that's how you kind of spend your free time, want to pursue career-wise? What is it?
Yeah. I don't even know, honestly. I wish I had some, like, deep philosophical answer, but I feel like it's just... I just always really enjoyed it. And I guess it's something... Like, I like laughing. I like making other people laugh. So I feel like it's like a sort of mutually beneficial, you know, sort of relationship that I can have with people or whatever. And then I guess there's probably some deeper thing about, like, my need for attention and approval or, you know, something like that. I'm sure at the core, if I ever talk to some psychologist or something, I probably is the core reason. But I guess I just like doing it. I like a lot of the people I've met through it. It's always been something fun, brighten up your day, you know?
Yeah. It kind of is great. All right. Thanks, Rachel.
Yeah.
Rails Comedy will be hosting Sketch Comedy Spectacular this Saturday, April 29th at 8 p.m. at the DC Arts Center, with sets from Bad Medicine and The Character Show. Tickets for that are available at railscomedy.com. Then, Rails Comedy is heading to Montreal Sketch Fest, performing on May 10th at 8 p.m. at Theatre St. Catherine, along with Jonah Border, West to West, and Gotham K. Head to montrealsketchfest.com for more information on that show. You can follow Rails Comedy all over the social media world at Rails Comedy, and they have a website, railscomedy.com. I've already said it. You can follow Rachel on Instagram at Rachel_N24. Sketchybator, our live sketch comedy open mic, will take place at Tattooed Mom on South Street here in Philly, Sunday, May 7th at 2 p.m. All the info, including if you want to sign up ahead of time, is available at sketchybator.com. And if you sign up ahead of time, it really eases my nerves to know that people are going to show up. My First Sketch is a Philly Sketch Fest production. You can find out more information at phillysketchfest.com. Follow Philly Sketch Fest on Instagram at Philly Sketch Fest. The music on this episode is by the band No No, which you can check out at nonoband.bandcamp.com. Like My First Sketch on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get the podcasts. This is Josh Hyam. Thanks for listening. Go see some comedy.